Thank you, Verna. And if you don't mind, probably I'll just keep sitting because my words will pick up better than if I was standing up. But, you know, microphones, I'm always a little leery of them. It reminds me of a chap that was giving a speech at a dinner, and he noticed that the sound was coming through and then disappearing and coming through, and he just didn't know what to do. And then he saw someone on the sideline motioning over to the chairman, and then he heard supposed to be a stage whisper, but it picked up on the microphone, and he heard the guy say, "You better tighten that thing up. I think there's a loose nut at the microphone." But I would like to congratulate you on having a historical society. From what I can hear and see, it's a very active one, and there's certainly lots of things to do, isn't there, when you get into it? We just started our historical society just a little over a year ago, and we certainly have been busy. We've now got a museum. There's all kinds of things that we have to put in it yet. It's not near finished. And even tonight, we've got some new material to put in the museum. Thank you, Hazel. It's a lot of work, and our little museum will be open on Saturday and Sunday afternoons, and on Wednesday afternoon, and by appointment. So far we've had an awful lot of people going through it, and we have been getting new artifacts practically every day since we opened up.
Just where is it going?
It's the old it first started out in 1856, the Anglican Church in Russell, the oldest church in the township. Later on, the Anglicans started about it, and they built a new church, and the Baptists took it over. They moved it from its site at that time, which was beside the Anglican cemetery, over onto Castor Street, where it sat until last fall, when it moved across the river beside the Methodist cemetery. There was a Methodist church there at one time. The Methodists built it. The Presbyterians later on bought it and used it. It's beside this. Our museum is beside the Methodist cemetery, and it's on Church Street. So I think we've got quite a few things mixed up in that.
Can I interrupt, Mr. Sennett? It's open all year round?
Well, yes, but so far, yes, yes. So, now I don't want you to get any idea that I'm an after-dinner speaker or anything, so feel free to ask any question at any time. It's just sort of a little sociable get-together. And I don't have that gift of speaking and making things interesting. Some people can. But I am interested in history, especially local history. You know, too many people have the idea that it's dull and colorless. It isn't. It's the most interesting thing you ever can get involved with. And the more you get involved, I think the more interesting you find it. It's very satisfying. So tonight I'd like to share a little bit with you my experience in writing a book, and how I went about it. Or maybe today I might be saying how I should have went about it. But one of the things I think you people are very aware of is the fact that we let too many things slide past and don't take the opportunity of picking it up at the time. I think you all can think of somebody that maybe has died in the last year that had all kinds of knowledge of folklore, and we should have got that down in a tape or made notes. Then you can, in days to come, you can get to work and make a book on it. And I know that the Women's Institute in Navin are have a very good Tweedsmuir history. We have one in Russell also. And some of the institutes are going even further. I think of the one in Harton Township, where in collaboration with Doris Humphreys, wrote a book on a Harton Township history. Another one worked with Carl Bennett. She is a professional writer, and it was the history of Edmiston. And it was done in conjunction with the Balsam Hill Women's Institute. So some of the women's institutes are actually going further than working on their Tweedsmuir book. The Tweedsmuir book is wonderful, and I don't know too much about the one you have here, but the one in Russell had one weakness, and that was when you go way back, they took a lot of it by word of mouth. And you find that when you're taking it by word of mouth, you may have five different people talking about the same thing, and they give you five different versions of it. It's just like a car accident. Everybody sees it different. So that's something you do have to kind of watch when you're taking accounts. After all, a lot of these are maybe 60 or 70 years old and secondhand to start with. So you do have to watch that. Whether you're working on a family tree or tracing a history or history of a village or a township, there's one thing in common. You'll all probably go to the same sources for your information. But once that's your source of information, your objective and the information you collect will be somewhat different. Now naturally, I'm more interested in a general history. And that's what I'd like to think that from Swamp and Shanty is. The family histories in this book were provided, in most cases, by the families. And there was no attempt made to go back into the roots of the family or to follow the different branches as they spread out from our own area. Again, I only took the pioneers or those people that had lived in the area and were still living in the area or ones that had contributed quite a bit to the history and welfare of the area. When I was land registrar, and this was especially true when I was making an abstract of title, and an abstract is actually a history of a certain particular piece of property in which you have to go back for 40 years to give a clear title, and sometimes you had to go back to the Crown. And you had to read them, every document, carefully to see if there was an error in it, see if the description was correct. And you used to pick up a lot of information, which was very interesting. And I'll just give you a little example of that here, and it's from Cumberland. I didn't know anything about it until I happened to be searching this particular lot. And it was between John S. Cameron of the Township of Cumberland, I won't go into all the ins and outs, and James Golightly, Willard Law, and Patrick McLaughlin, trustees of the Presbyterian Church in the Township of Cumberland, County of Russell. A sum of money was raised by subscription to pay law costs in the case of the murder of the two McGonagall girls. All charges, burial expenses, monuments, have been paid, and a sum. Now you see, their writing wasn't just as good as my writing. I can read my writing, but nobody else can. Some of this writing is rather difficult to read. But what it amounted to, there was money left over from the subscription, and they decided to use the money to buy a village lot and erect a dwelling house and deed the same to the trustees of the Presbyterian Church and their successors in office, in trust for James McGonagall and the family.
And that was on for this piece of property here, is what you're saying?
No, it would be in Cumberland, because it was being part of lot number 15 in the first concession, you see.
Yeah, Cumberland Village.
Yes. So they built a house for this McGonagall family, And evidently the two girls were murdered.
Now,
I don't know anything about it, but there's the kind of stuff that sometimes you would pick up. Another little thing that in a deed that, this was a deed in Russell on what we call Mill Street, which is along the river. And this lot lies south of the main road which was traveled from the Ottawa River to the St. Lawrence River. Now, I have run onto documents which referred to the road from Faubertville to the St. Lawrence River. So, in other words, it followed the Old Forest Road. And this is I got this in public record archives. It's the Old Forest Road through Cumberland, which led into Russell, followed the Forest Road through Russell and on out through to Dundas and to the St. Lawrence River. And this was done about 1841.
That just started at Russell, is it?
No, this started at Faubertville.
It started at Cumberland Village.
Faubertville.
And come right through. This is just Cumberland Township. If you want to follow Russell, you can find it in the book. But this is the sort of thing that you'll run onto in deeds and stuff out of the registry office. After I retired in 1982, I decided to do some in-depth research. And what history we did have in our area was very sketchy. And I thought our first records were inaccurate. Belden's Historical Atlas, Rose History, and the Tweedsmuir History all had the same settlers, first settlers in Russell. Now, if they were there, they must have been pretty well hid. They may have had a little log cabin and were squatters someplace, but the tax assessors missed them. And I never heard of anybody that escaped the tax man, not even back then. So, anyway, in my research, I think I found who were the first settlers, and again, I got proof, which is very necessary when you're trying to make a history. When it comes to research and filing the results for future use, I think I learned it the hard way. I think one of the first things you should do is get one of those filing cabinets. Put it beside your desk. And when you're researching anything, say you have municipal records or something, and there's an interesting page or something you want to keep, you make a copy of it. And you'll put it in a file, whether it was under railroads or roads or whatever, churches, doctors, whatever. And you will number your files and then make an index for it, so that you can put your fingers on it anytime you want anything. And then I also cross-indexed a lot of things, because you might have a paper that was mainly concerned with a doctor or something, but there might be some little item in there that was of interest of something else. And when you come to put it all together, you might miss it. So you have a cross-index saying, see file under doctors for further information. Now, this will take a little bit of time when you're doing it, but it's well worth the time. Because if you have everything just sort of placed around, you don't know where in the dickens anything is. It's very necessary to work up a good filing system. Now, your sources of research. Well, I started out at the county council minutes. And they commenced back on the 8th of February, 1842. And they were in these great big large leather-covered books, you know, that's about so wide, so thick, all with handwritten. The handwriting is a lot different then than it is today. Some was beautiful, and some was very, very hard to decipher. There was no way in the world you could ever read all those books word for word. I'd be still researching in Larnell. Something I learned in the registry office, how to scan a page. In other words, you pick out three or four words that you're going to look for. and you look at the page, and you'll, strange as it may seem, those words will jump up and catch your eye. So then you would read that particular part. Now, I didn't try to write anything out. I took the tape recorder, and whatever I wanted to pick out, I put it on the tape recorder. It saved a lot of time. When you get home, you can sort out that at your leisure. I used the same tape recorder for interviewing some of the older people. And it's not as easy as you'd think. You go to some people and they completely clam up. I'd have to put the tape recorder away, talk to them, go home and maybe talk into it myself, or make notes. And then there's others would talk about everything in the world but what you want to hear. And you couldn't get them turned around onto what you want to talk about. And now, naturally, I got a good deal of information from the Land Registry Office records. And for anybody that's doing any work there, I think one of the first things you should do is get a pass, which will entitle you to go in and do research. Now, it doesn't cost anything when you do that. Searches right now, if you go in as anybody searching a property, I believe it's $4 to get the book. And back in the good old days when I was registered, it was only a dollar. We often threw in a few documents just to keep everybody happy. Now it's near an arm and a leg when you go into the registry office. So that would cut down your expenses a lot. The only problem, if somebody that's a lawyer or has work to do in the office wants the book, they have priority, which I think is only fair. Now on your registry office books, there is anything that ever happened to property is on that particular lot and concession. Mortgages, whatever. And a lot of it, or it all goes back to the patent or the first deed from the Crown. Your wills are also registered in the registry office. Only wills where you own property. If you own some property and die, then your will would be registered. But if you don't own any property, then it's just probated in the surrogate court and there's no record in the registry office. Early records of the county surrogate court which probated wills are in the Ontario Archives at Toronto. And after 1938, they're in the county courthouse in whatever county you're working, say Laurnell or Ottawa. Before 1859, wills were probated in the provincial probate court, and you'll find copies in the Ontario Archives. And microfilm of early will registers, 1842 to 1886, are in the public archives at Ottawa. A lot of information can be found in wills. A lot of people have found relations they didn't know existed. And it's rather funny. Sometimes I've had people come in and say, well, gee, I knew Dad had a brother. I never even knew his name. And you'd wonder that people don't know relations that close. Oh, and when you go into the registry office to search for anything, be sure you know the lot and concession number. It'll save everybody a lot of problem because everything is indexed under lot and concession township. Now, I noticed I mentioned the public archives at Ottawa and Toronto. You can find all kinds of information there. The complete census records are in microfilm from 1851 to 1891. The 1842 census names only the heads of the household. The 1861 census is a very good one. You can get a terrific amount of information from that. You have lists of militia, the payrolls, there's the directories and gazetteers as they call them, which told the trade or occupation of different people. And they had them for years, up until, but the war, and even later, the last war. You'll find assessment rolls there. And the journals of the Legislative Assembly, today we call them Hansard. They're very, very interesting. I had trouble reading them. First of all, they were so interesting I couldn't go around to read what I was supposed to. I just kept reading one page after the other. And there's all kinds of books. There's an index, and you can pick out whatever book you want to find. There's thousands and thousands of books. Books that are not in print, and the only place you could get them would be in the archives. One of the things you have to do when you go to the archives, the first thing if you're going to search is to get a research card. And you have to sign in and sign out every day. You can't take anything with you. And there's certain rules and regulations you have to follow in there. Now, some other good sources I found. Minutes of the Municipal Council. They weren't much good in Russell because he'd lost them all, but there was a few. But you can get a lot of information there. And the minutes of any organization, fraternal, societies, church records. Now, church records are a bit hard sometimes to track down. Most of the old records of the Anglicans in this area are at the Anglican Diocesan Archives at 71 Bronson. For the Catholic Church, quite often they're in the church itself, but if not, they would be in the bishop's care in the Diocese of Ottawa. And now, many of our early settlers were Wesleyan Methodists. Now, if you want to find any of their old records, baptismal records from 1844 to 1890, are in the United Church Archives in Toronto. And marriage registers after 1858 may be found in the Ontario Archives in Toronto. There are also some in Ottawa. And of course, along with the churches, the graveyard seems to go hand in hand. And there you can get the exact date of death or birth. And that's very, quite useful if you want to follow it further and check the newspaper around that date. If somebody died and you want to get a little information, you may be able to get it in the old newspapers. Now, the Ottawa Library has newspapers. They have them in the archives. But you should know pretty close to the date because it's pretty hard going through microfilm on newspapers trying to find some one thing in particular. And speaking of newspapers, the Ottawa Citizen, 1923 to 1940, had a little, they called it old-time stuff. And each Saturday it was on page 2. Now again, you would never be able to find all this on the microfilm, but the Historical Society of Ottawa have made some scrapbooks of it, which I would think would be the best way of getting any information that you would want there. Another source of information, I didn't make use of it because I thought I had all that was necessary, is the Mormon Genealogical Center, Latter-day Saints. And their main archives is in Salt Lake City. And they have a good deal of pre-1900 Ottawa Valley records. They're world famous. They have records all from all over the world. And also in the archives, you have letters and papers of various citizens. And even letters from your local people. Some of the old letters are very, very interesting. You get a lot of information out of them. Surprising. You get to know what people were doing and how they were living. They wrote a little different kind of a letter in those days than we do today. They said more than "we're feeling fine, hope you're the same." And the pictures. Now, every family put in here is old pictures. And I found that when you'd go around and ask them about a picture, Oh, well, we've got a family picture, but I don't think much of interest to anybody. So I'd ask to see it anyway, and sometimes there was a background which was a house or a building which is no longer there, and it was quite interesting. Very, very often there's something like that in the background. Sometimes it's just a snap of one person with an interesting background. So it may take a lot of time going through pictures, but sometimes you get, if you're making up a book, you'll find things that's worthwhile. I thought, you know, when I started to look for pictures, it'd be no problem. And it certainly wasn't. I ended up, I'm sure, with over 1,000 pictures. And when you start to pick and choose what you're going to use, well, a couple of weeks, well, I spent all winter. And I wasn't sure at the end whether I was picking the right ones. But it's surprising the number of pictures you'll come onto. That's interesting, and form a story in themselves. Another important part of our archives is the National Map Collection. And Betty Kidd, she was Betty May from Russell, she still lives in Russell, is the head of this section in the archives, and she's only too willing to help anybody. That now they have old maps right from day one, you might say, of different areas. Now, another thing, I think probably you would be aware of it here as much as anybody, but financial help can be obtained from the Ontario Heritage Foundation and the Ministry of Citizenship and Culture. Now, if anybody is researching and hoping to do a book, it would be best to get this support through the Historical Society, not personally, and go right away as soon as you're thinking of starting. Now, I didn't get any help from the government. I had went to the municipality, they were supposed to do it. They didn't get around in time, and I ended up with the book published before they got all their work done. So there wasn't much chance of getting any help on that. But I understand they're very good to help in the research. I didn't count the research as costing anything. If you did, you'd never get paid for it. You don't do it for that. I went to Toronto to the archives, dozens and dozens of times to the archives in Ottawa, and to Laurnell, and I understand now that they would help fund and anything like that. And they also would help fund on the printing of the book. Now, when you come to putting the book on paper, first of all, I wrote it out by longhand. The main reason I did that was I can't type. And fortunately, one of the girls that used to work with me in the registry office had quit work. And she told me any time I wanted to try and put the book on it, or type it or whatever, she would give me a hand. So we decided maybe we should use a word processor. And she put the first copy on the word processor, and she had to go away, and then Vina took over and made all the corrections. So she also had to learn how to use a word processor. But I think that's the only way to go. I figure that in this, on the book that we printed, we saved at least $2,000 by putting it on the word processor. It's much easier to make corrections. You can use the printer to print out sections. When you see it printed out, you can pick out the errors quicker than you can off the screen. And if you were doing the book, you would be able to maybe finish off certain sections. We put it all on a disk, and they can take it off the disk. The printer can take it right off the disk. It has to be a floppy disk, 5.5 inch. There's some typewriters that you can put it on a disk, but they're too small. And It won't work with a printing machine. Some of the things that books that I found interesting, perhaps some of you have read Gurley's History of the Ottawa Valley, 1896. You can get it in the City of Ottawa Public Library. They won't let you take it out, but you can read it. Now, he jumps all over from post to pillar, but you will find some interesting things in it. Surprising the things that you run into where that was concerned with both the Russell and Cumberland townships. I had an old account book of James Keyes, who was the first registrar of Russell County, which included Cumberland. Keyes not only was a registrar, but he had his fingers and put near everything else that went on in the county. He had all kinds of land, he had a store, and this was an account book he had in 1865, 63, 64, 65, and 66, I believe, and where different people had accounts with him. And one of the things which you'll be interested down here was there was an account with W.W. Walsh, and on the credit page, he got, I think it was £270, so many shillings, for Bear Brook rafting. So in other words, Walsh, through the year or whatever length of time, and he had men with him, run an account with Keyes for his supplies, and then when he sold the raft, whether he sold it to Keyes, I'm not sure how it worked, but anyway, there was a credit there for Bear Brook rafting, and also for Ottawa rafting. So there's proof again that there was rafts run on Bear Brook and so on. We also have proof that there was rafts run on the Castor. Same kind of proof. So you never know what you're going to pick up when you're running through your different things that researching. Like, for example, one day the county council minutes. I ran onto a little item where it said that some chap by the name of Cotton was the trustee in 1897 at Osborne, James Cotton. Now, I believe Osborne was a high school at that time, and that was the high school for Russell and Cumberland. Russell and Cumberland at one time, don't know whether I made a note of that or not any place, but Russell and Cumberland one time, back in 1894, there was a bylaw passed by County Council, and they declared Russell, Cambridge, and Clarence were united and attached to Cumberland Township. Well, then the next year, December the 28th, they dissolved the bylaw, and Cumberland was by itself, and Russell, Clarence, and Cambridge were one township. That was before there was too many people around. Another thing we shared with Cumberland, we had a post office. We had a little post office called Baton. Ever hear of it? I think I has. That's just over the boundary, Russell and Cumberland, on the edge of this forest road here. And there was McVeigh's there, lived at that time, and I believe they probably called the post office Baton after the McVeighs. Seemed to make sense. The post office was there from 1862 to 1884. It may have been there before that, but I have, on some of the old directories, I found where it was there in 1862. In 1884, then, it was moved across the boundary of Cumberland into Russell. I think the government changed or something at the time, and somebody, Woods, took it over. From 1884 to 1895, and they called it Dickinson then. They changed the name of it, but it still served Cumberland and the north part of Russell. Well, then, in 1895, Wilson's, who lived kitty corner from where I live today, had the post office, and they ran it from 1895 to 1914. Well, then, mail delivery came into existence, and most of these little post offices disappeared. Now, I think that's about all I had prepared. I think maybe I bored you fellas long enough. But it's if you have any questions, don't be afraid to ask me. I probably don't have the answer, but I'll try.
Your book is mostly about the village of Russell, or the town of Russell.
And the,
I remember it's been a while since I read it.
The first four concessions, really, the area surrounding the village. The East End had already a book, so I didn't bother about the that part of it, you see.
Is
just
it in French, by any chance?
Yes,
okay.
It is.
Anybody
else in front of me? Well, I
wanted
to ask about the old time stuff. What years of the citizen that was? I said 1923 to 40, because I wrote it. Yes, down.
Yes.
1923.
1940.
And the Historical Society that has the scrapbook, did they take all the articles, or just did they select
them? I don't know. I don't think they have it all complete, because it's an awful big job to do something like that.
Was that Harry Walker who wrote that?
He used to do some things like that, yes. I can remember reading his.
Didn't he do the old time stuff?
He probably did. In later years he did, yes. Yeah.
And when, if you took some information from that, would you research it again? Because there were lots of lies on those.
I tried to get a lot of the basic things that you were sure of, say, out of minutes. Then you would get some of this other stuff that corresponded. You have to sort of tie it all together. You get certain dates that you can prove. Like, one of the things that...
were mostly colored, though, don't you think? I can remember my...
A lot of it was...
Yeah. Grandfather, he could read that. We read them together.
Yes.
And he would complain terribly about things that were in there that were not right.
Yes, well, this is what you find when people are talking about your back history. A lot of it is colored, and sometimes it's colored to suit themselves. Example, I was... one family, and there started like two branches of the same family, but you go back, your great-great-grandfather is the same person. And I got their histories from both these people, and you wouldn't know there were any relation. And this is what you often run into, that people color the history to suit themselves. Like in Russell, most people said that Purvis was the first settler, and I didn't agree with it at all. Finally, I found in a book there had been a survey done by the Canada Company in 1827, and the surveyor's report said there was only one settler in Russell, a Mr. Loux, who had a mill in the Castor. To me, that was proof. A surveyor, when he wrote that, would certainly know what was going on in the, and he was checking all of the Canada Company lands in the township. So he, to me, that was pretty good proof that he was the first settler. In 1832, I've got it here someplace, I hope. Yes. This was an assessment list of the township of Russell for the year 1832. He'd give Elisha F. Loux, John Matice, Samuel Thompson, John Purvis, and Nelson Hitchman. Now they, in 1832, to me, those were the first five settlers we had in the township. Maybe there was somebody else there that they didn't know about. He was off in a cabin someplace, but it's not likely. but this
these
would...
These were assessment records.
Yes.
Where did you get those from?
At the present time, this was Osgood and Russell. Osgood and Russell were tied together as one township in those days. They have them up at Vernon.
So these are municipal records?
I know they came, I think, from the county. These were sent in to the... I forget who it was, but they were sent in to Laurinelle anyway.
Okay. And they have them in Vernon now.
But they have them in Vernon now.
Yeah, I don't think they go back that far for our township. I think your list is 1842.
Yeah. We have them from 1832 to 1850. There's no census for 1851, unfortunately.
No, same for Cumberland Township. All those records are lost.
Yes, you can't get them. So I have this up to 1850, so it sort of makes up for the fact that we don't have 1851 census.
So you had to, basically what you did was have to go out and find something to substitute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How long did it take you to do the research for this book? Because the book is excellent.
5 years.
5 years, yeah.
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 And I think I had a head start on a lot of people because...
Oh, certainly.
I had the experience in the registry office.
Yeah, you knew what you were looking for.
And, yeah, and I knew how to go about searching.
Yeah.
But I find that there's no way in the world you can research as much as you would like.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending project. One thing leads to another.
Now, and have you got another book in the works at the moment?
I'm still working.
Or should I ask?
No, I have not right now. I told all I knew in that one, so I think you're out of luck. But well, I'm not a writer to start with. That's the first attempt I ever made at writing anything, and it didn't come easy. You know, when I was thinking about starting to write, I was read a lot of things and so on, and I read one book where they asked this guy, "How do you go about writing?" There's nothing to it. You take lots of paper, all kinds of pencils, and write down the thoughts as they occur. Well, I had no trouble with the paper and pencil. It was this occurring business. That,
did you find, once you had the material, though, once you started to get the research material there and you started to put it in some kind of sequence, it usually starts to write itself at that point, no?
A certain amount, yes. Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
You end up just basically linking things together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the book, and again, I went through an awful lot of histories of different kinds, and I think the only way to do a history is divide it into your. I put it into settlement and general history. Now somebody might do it a little different. But manufacturing, small businesses, services, so on, you can group them together and work them out together, and you're not jumping all over the place. Like
that's why your book is so valuable, though, because for anybody doing research, you can turn immediately to a certain section, and you don't have to read all through it.
You know, it costs a lot to make one to print this and get it out. And by the time I got it out, I owed a lot of people a lot of money, and I used to wonder if I ever come out of it. Fortunately, it's done very well, and I've sold out the first printing. But I'm also happy. This last while, I have, I think it's a 10 or 12 universities have ordered books from me,
yeah.
Different universities throughout Ontario. So I feel quite happy about that.
I should interject here. Mr. Stanley's going to be at the museum over the Christmas program too, doing a book signing. So if you want to do some Christmas shopping, you might want to go down and see him and get an autographed book. What is it called? Put you on the spot.
No.
I think it's the 10th of
December,
Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4.
Yeah.
And this book here is one of the, I got a laminated cover on it there, and one of the newer ones I got done. Some of the some histories go into the, it's a different thing. If you're going to go with families, that's a different type of a book. And your whole book can be on just families. And that's, I was a little afraid of that when I started into families. Most of the people give me pages and pages and pages. And you had to cut it back. I could have had, I was about 175 pages in the book, and you could have just as easy had 275 in it. Then the cost would get prohibitive.
More than twice
the... Getting the book printed, now the price today would probably be quite a bit more than it was a couple of years ago, but you're looking at $20,000, more or less. Thousand.
To me, you know, I don't know for how many of you picked up a copy of the book. It's got to be the one of the best researched, best planned local history books that I've read, that I've looked at in this area. I would think it's probably just part of Eastern Ontario. It's extremely well done.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed with it.
It makes it all worthwhile when people enjoy it, and a lot of times you used to think, wonder what the dickens am I getting into this for.
People are gonna, you know, like I was talking today about that book that was written by C. Thomas in 1896. I mean, anybody who, like us, who is doing research, know what a valuable tool that is, and this is what you're leaving behind, and it's extremely valuable to a community. And I think citizenship and culture and governments should get involved in promoting those kind of books.
Yes, yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
And I just was too slow in getting around to it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize at the start. I didn't. When I first started, I wasn't sure I was going to write a book. Then you get so much. I had files and files and files. And, well, what are you going to do with it? I don't want to die in it. You know, and it's no good to anybody. I'm trying to get it down and see what happens with it.
Are your files going to your historical society, or where are they?
Well, they're at home yet. I'm still using them.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's surprising the number of people that call me up now and want to know things, and I have to go back to the files to pick it out.
categories
and subject headings that you, that as you worked, became the most valuable to you? Did that keep changing as you found new information, or did you start out with a framework that you tried to work with first? No, I started out just helter-skelter. I had no idea. I was just picking up information wherever I could get it. Then eventually it comes a time when you start to get it in files. But just at the start, no. When you pick up so many different things in so many different places, then you've got to start to get it into some sort of a order. But you can't really research just for one thing, because you're not going to find anything if you do that. You've got to sort of make it a general, then a search, then when you come home, you put it in whatever file you found, whatever information you have. Oh, there's the odd thing, like when I was looking for army records and stuff like that. Well, sure, there's nothing but army records I'm going to find. But as a rule, it was a general, you never knew what you were going to run onto. One of the things that I was often sorry I didn't fill out a little more, which I enjoy more than anything else, is a little piece I'd put in odds and ends. And it's just little stories about happenings in the area. And I actually could have done a lot more of that. And I was sorry after that I hadn't.
That might make another book on its own.
Well, probably, but... Well, I tried not to put anything in that would embarrass anybody. because through the years you do run onto some things that they're not bad, but maybe somebody would feel a little embarrassed about it. And,
well, I hope they're tucked away somewhere.
And I maybe someday will make a list of them.
Yeah.
But they are interesting. They're little stories. You know, some people are characters. We don't have as many characters in the country now as we used to have.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. With more, people follow a line. Everybody dresses the same today. And
oh, what are we?
But I mean, you think of kids, so on.
Oh,
but,
I don't. We have lots of characters in Cumberland Township, I'm sure.
But
still, and young ones too, a lot of them.
I often think we had maybe more characters way, way back.
Yeah. You were talking about the Canada Company earlier on. When if you could put on your land registrar hat for a minute, were there a lot of was there a lot of land in Russell that was turned over to the Canada Company? Because my understanding was initially it was opened up for settlement, and then as time went by and the land wasn't picked up, some of it was turned over to the Canada Company.
Well, it seems a lot went to the Canada Company quite early in our history.
Yeah, our history is relatively late in history.
Yeah.
Province.
Yes, the same with Russell. We were kind of a forgotten swampy area, and
yeah.
No.
Oh, well, who was the surveyor? Who surveyed your township originally? One of the
Mackinac? Yes. Yes. In 1822, he surveyed the Osgood and Russell. And he said that his name was William MacDonald, and he spelled it MacDonald and MacDonnell.
Yeah.
Any way you wanted to go, he had it. But he said, I have petitioned His Excellency in Council to be allowed to ballot in Osgood only, as I cannot accept a ballot in Russell. In other words, when he's talking about there, they used to give them the land, big chunks of land, for their work as surveyor. They didn't pay them in money, they paid them by giving them a whole lot of land. And they called it ballot. It's a word they used then, and not, we don't use it in the same sense today. But anyway, he received about 2,850 acres in Russell Township for his services as a surveyor. And in that same letter, he stated that owing to swampy conditions, Russell would be unsuitable for settlement for centuries to come. That was in 1822. So in 1827, we already had a settler. They wanted to prove him wrong.
Diary at all?
I got that information from a surveyor who had the original copy of the original letter. Now, there probably is a whole lot of letters in the archives in Toronto pertaining to.
So these would be letters that MacDonnell sent to whom?
To the Surveyor General.
Well, Roy McGilvery was asking me, and apparently he can't find any. He wondered if there were diaries available, because this gentleman surveyed quite a bit of Eastern Ontario.
Yes, he did.
And I don't. He picked up a seventh of the lots in our township the same way, the ballots. Okay.
That was a pretty good pay, wasn't it, for that time?
Well, the land was pretty worthless. There were no roads. There was no way of getting onto it, really. Mm.
You'd have to be young and know you've been a little on top of the road. Yeah, well, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't buy the address. Yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
But he has a descendant, his name is MacDonald, and he's with the Brockville Historical Society.
Yes, eh?
And do you know Elizabeth, have you met Elizabeth Stewart?
Quite often, yes.
Yeah, okay. They have a MacDonnell family history in their collection. And this gentleman's a descendant of this man down there.
Yes, Elizabeth Stewart knows more about people's history, family, and so on. She's forgot more than I'll ever learn in my life.
She's the one who told me about your book first.
She was, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned the 86 Lawn Archives. The 82 census was in the archives. Which archives was that?
Well, you get them in any, either Toronto or Ottawa, but they have them in Ottawa. They have all the census records in Ottawa.
I
If anybody wants to take a look at this old map, and another thing, I didn't have too many things at home that connecting with Cumberland, unfortunately, because that wasn't what I was really searching for. But years and years ago, the return of marriages and so on was filed in the registry offices. And this was a copy of one. And that was in 1865. Now there's some people from Cumberland in it, and that's why I brought it down. So I've got it, which if you might like to take a look at. This little thing, the Forest Road in Cumberland, it shows Navan. Navan didn't exist then, but it was close to being existing.
Yeah, now I'm curious if that, would that be the Forest Road, Sid, that they still call the Forest Road down out of Vars, coming out of Vars? Because that was renamed the Henry Williamson Road, and then they renamed it back to the Forest Road again.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
Okay,
and that's the last one.
And that's pretty well.
Navan there. I heard one time that was the road that went back to the bush there.
Oh, it is. This is the original, is it?
Well, it's a copy of the original, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You see this? That connected then with this. Is the Forest Road through Russell, you see.
Oh, yeah.
And the two came together right there, you see.
George and Mary Shaw.
Look at this, Robert Walsh, County Longford, Ireland. William Shaw, County
Which is the Forest Road there now? What road is the Forest Road there?
In Russell? The only part that's left is by Ed Young's old place.
But that's Nepean.
That's the only part left.
Going north and south.
Yeah, come out at the old Orange Hall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's all that's left.
Yeah. No, there's no photocopy here. No.
There,
yeah.
This was the, this isn't, but this is the assessment. I like the way they made two S's in those days.
Oh, yeah, with a big long S, yeah.
Well, it's kind of a...
This is the one about the mechanical.
Yeah.
When I first run into that, I couldn't figure what it was until I come to Russell.
Yeah, and then you could figure out what it is. Well, it's the same with the census records, too.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering about the picture, it was taken the summer I published the book in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and I was taken that summer. In the air. In the air.
From an aircraft or
a helicopter? Yes, an aircraft.
Before we all wander around, I think Kathleen would like to thank Mr. Stanley.
Did they build them a house, the McGonagall?
No, they built the house for the Presbyterian Church.
The Presbyterian Church looked after the burial of these two children and all the expenses.
Oh.
Well,
Mr. Stanley, we want to thank you.
Can we have everybody's attention?
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
We'd like to give Mr. Stanley this little token of our appreciation for coming out and talking to us tonight and giving us all these tidbits and letting us look at some of these very fascinating documents. You know, it's very tempting to...
frisk Kathleen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will.
Anyway, thank you for coming, and we appreciate you coming to talk to us.
Thank you.
Well...